if you run an experiment and you do statistics, or you look at a dairy and you try to make decisions, in fact, you want to do it with the same power. You want to be sure about the decision that you make. You want to be sure about the statistics. So, and that's in the beginning, I had no idea that statistics was nice, because I was thinking that it was a separate thing that was within academics. But in fact, your everyday decision making should be somehow driven by data.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future.
Hi-D from DSM Firmenich optimizes vitamin D levels to increase milk yield, enhance calcium to phosphorus ratio, and strengthen immunity. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. More milk and higher conception rates? Contact AHV to take uterine health to the next level. Lallemand Animal Nutrition, partnering in microbial solutions for a changing world.
Hello, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Emil Hostens. Emil is an associate professor of digital dairy management and dairy analytics at Cornell University. Emil, welcome to the show and thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been at Cornell now for how long?
Roughly 1 year and a half. Let's say in a few months, it will be 1 year and a half. So yeah, freshman.
A freshman. Well, you're not a New York native. You're not paying in-state tuition. Where did you grow up?
I grew up on the other side of the ocean. I grew up in Europe a small town in the Flemish part of Belgium. So other side of the ocean.
Big farming community. Were you involved in agriculture at all, or is that something you came to later?
My grandmother was a very small dairy farmer. That's in the west Flemish part of Belgium. She was dairy farmer. She was milking 4 cows by hand. So I remember when the first milking machine came on the farm. And then when quota were installed in Europe, my uncle decided to get rid of the dairy and they installed all Belgian blues. So then I kind of grew up with the Belgian blue fever, let's say. So for me, it was more normal for a calf to be born from the side than from the back. But eventually now I understood that that's not what you are supposed to do anymore.
So then, yeah, you sort of then migrated into animal science, veterinary medicine. What did you study and where did you go from there?
So I had, my mom was always quite technical and I knew somehow that by working with my hands, I was a big Lego, let's say fan. And I knew that somehow that whole technical part in me was something that I liked. But my grandmother pushed me to become a vet. So I went to vet school in Ghent University. And then from there, gradually, let's say, I started to understand that maybe I should do something with the combination of the technical and the non-technical, the veterinary side. And then by doing my PhD, which was a joint PhD with animal science, I also started to appreciate much more the whole animal science a component of, let's say, the veterinary world. I always think that if I look at the US, for example, you have an undergraduate in animal science or dairy science, and then you do a vet degree on top of it. I do think that that does make sense. I always looked at the European, curriculum as quite heavily loaded in a way that does not train for, let's say, the best large animal vets. Because we got a lot of anatomy, all these, let's say, really basic things. But when I look at the animal science degree and dairy science, where a lot of nutrition, maybe even statistics, all of those, herd health management, I think that's something which I started appreciating by working in the two worlds. So I always love to work on both sides of the ocean even. So I don't say one is good or bad, but it's good to learn from each other. And that's what I started appreciating, that the animal science component is as important, especially now in herd health, where you want to keep herds more healthy. So yeah, that's how I, that's the start of it.
And I think we can see that in the impact you've had, is that you're bringing great perspectives and ideas from sort of both sides of that gap, which is outstanding. So what made you decide to come to the U.S. then? You said you made this move about a year and a half ago. Where were you working right before that?
Utrecht University. So I did, I became faculty I did a postdoc in Ghent as well. But then in that postdoc, that's when really my technical, let's say, I started to see that. So I was already in the veterinary world, and then let's say the dairy science world, I started to become active, but my real passion was always in the data side of things. And then I, especially during that postdoc, I got some awards from Microsoft. I enrolled into my own, let's say, another master myself in data science. I thought a long time about doing a college degree, you have all these, let's say, different colleges of reproduction, but I said, maybe let's try to focus first on really training myself first in the statistical world. But at that moment, the whole machine learning world started to evolve. So I enrolled in a kind of computational statistics program. And by that time, I also had some stuff going on, let's say, with my entrepreneurial head. And by doing that, I really was attracted to a position, a faculty position at Utrecht University. There I combined, again, I really picked up some data-intensive projects that needed somebody who was able to handle a lot of, let's say, big data, if that's a name that you can give it. And from there, then, let's say, suddenly, I always said that I would not move unless there was a university calling, and then from America, and then suddenly that happened in August 2022 that happened. And then it took some time, let's say, to get through the process. But then, yeah, I'm here. I'm quite happy to be here.
Unlike traditional vitamin D3, which requires metabolic conversion in the liver and kidneys before becoming bioavailable, 25-hydroxy-D3 bypasses the first step, allowing for faster absorption and improved efficiency. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich optimizes vitamin D levels to increase milk yield, enhance calcium to phosphorus ratio, and strengthen immunity. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
Speaking at least for myself and a lot of my colleagues, we're happy to have you here. As a side note, I'm going to force you to say like one positive and one negative observation coming over from Europe.
Positive is that the amount of money I attracted in 1 year is completely impossible to compare to European situation. So that was very positive. So my lab grew almost like to 10 people in like less than a year and a half.
Wow.
So, and that was with, let's say, some federal money, of course, some money that they allowed me to use from my startup, but also private money. It's incredible. And that's something which Europe is, we're not used to, for example, seeing private money being used for research, or people giving donations to their college. So that's something which is it's really nice and allows you to grow. Negative, well, it's I can say that from because I'm not politically involved anyhow, is that of course what happened over the last half a year is that suddenly then, I have 4 pending applications. We have no idea what's going to happen. Yep. That's negative. That's maybe on the same side. Yeah. And other than that, no, right now I don't see any real academic negatives to it.
Well, good. I'm glad it's going well. All right. Well, let's dig into the topic that you're really on the bleeding edge of, and that's really making better use of data to improve management of dairy farms. And I think maybe one of the first places you got into this is something that actually lots of producers and consultants talk about all the time is, you know, why do I have to run 5 different pieces of software? Maybe it's 10 just to make my dairy work every day and to go back and look at how things are going. talk us through, you know, what you see as the norm on a dairy in the U.S. today.
Yeah, the norm is not, that's probably the bad side. But that's the nice thing is that this is the same everywhere in the world. So I really started working with, American dairies. I started working with some Kansas dairies when I was probably 26 or 27, using their data. And of course, at that moment, Dairycom was predominant. I think a lot has happened, especially because some of these companies, they had data, but we didn't have, let's say, the tools to work with the data. It was used to manage the dairy. And I think those programs did a really good job running it. But what we saw, let's say, over the last 15 years, while I've been in this industry, and it's almost 20 years, but what we saw is that people wanted to do more. And especially what I didn't like is that we had to go through these companies, especially as academics, to get insights that we knew that were needed on some dairies. I was consulting a lot with dairies, and they would ask me to run through their records. Let's say in the beginning it was mainly repro-based, but I was always getting stuck that the number of steps that I needed to do to, let's say, analyze it in a way that I think was academically sound. And maybe then that's what was a bit of the problem, is that people would look at me or us and say, like, yeah, but those guys, they have academic ideas and they don't know how to run a dairy. But the moment that I showed my insights to the producers, I always got traction. They were always like, hey, can you do this for my dairy as well? And that's what I think has happened. And I see you nodding because you recognize it, because these producers, they get very, very, let's say, yeah, positive about the way that sometimes we look at it. And this sometimes it's a bit maybe too academic. But on the other hand, if you run an experiment and you do statistics, or you look at a dairy and you try to make decisions, in fact, you want to do it with the same power. You want to be sure about the decision that you make. You want to be sure about the statistics. And that's in the beginning, I had no idea that statistics was nice, because I was thinking that it was a separate thing that was within academics. But in fact, your everyday decision making should be somehow driven by data. And then what I especially then started seeing, but that's, let's say, that's when we developed our first products from the non-academic side, but that was that people started really appreciating the analysis that we ran on top of, let's say, whether it was a specific herd management systems. One of the things that I will almost never do is I will almost never look at records from a farm through the eyes of the software company, because I'm always like, yeah, but how did they calculate it? How did they? And I get suspicious, of course, and that's our nasty part. But once you start understanding how impactful the underlying data the underlying data and data quality combined with how the metrics are calculated, how that can affect your decision making. I've seen people make the wrong decisions because I knew that the calculations that they were looking at were wrong. And I now see it the same we see in the academic world. So that was, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, where we tried to solve it by, I like to use the raw records from farms. That's all it gives me, especially when we're consulting, but also when we're doing statistics. I don't use the aggregates from somebody else, because we don't have any idea. And then, of course, what happened is we only had a few players in that market that would allow us to use those records. But the next problem was that then we had farms with even, a diverse set of underlying sources. In the beginning, it was only a few sources in Europe. But now I think we are at 20, 30, 40 different software. Let's say, you had a very dominant market here in the US with, let's say, PC Dart and Dairycom being the predominant ones. But once you move to Europe, it's a complete disaster. Well, that's the bad thing about Europe. That's a disaster. It's very diverse and very difficult to work with these dairies. So I always wanted to somehow make some tools there, which also from an academic perspective would be helpful. because often we had hypotheses that I was thinking like, yeah, but we have the data. We only need to find a way to get the data from these farms, and we could almost test these hypotheses live. I often hear people making big conclusions about what they think as being a generalizable advice. But once you look, it's probably very specific herd effects that is not there if you would test it across herds. And right now, what I'm really, really trying to do at my lab is how can we use next generation, let's say, techniques to allow us to almost do live hypothesis testing. You want to know if a ration A has an effect on the lactation curve? Well, let's ask a network of farms what they think about it. And then you can think about, of course, the more difficult, let's say, implementations. But those are things that should become possible. And everything that I did is probably a step towards that. And at a certain moment, I started to work a lot with sensor technology, which is a complete different ballgame. Because when you're used to work with, let's say, records from farms, that's a small data set, a few megabytes. The biggest dairy comms that I've seen is probably, 100 megabyte, maybe a gig, when there's a lot of, let's say, sensor data coming in, but that's not even the whole data set. But once you start using, let's say, for example, robotic data, or you see sensor data coming in on a really, let's say, where the dimensionality really goes to maybe even every 2 hours, then you see data sets growing and growing and growing into the gigabytes. And especially the sensors really that allowed us to do it. The nice thing is that then I really could use my skills and develop it, because you cannot host the data on your own computer anymore. So you need that novel skills of, let's say, cloud and combination of cloud and edge. So, and that's when it becomes really interesting. And just combine. I always combine everything that I published. I can say that it's almost always has a kind of a combination of data sets that people before didn't think about. And then, that's a bit how it started and how it's evolving.
So I think you sort of got into data integration partly because you wanted to bring in data from multiple farms for hypothesis testing, but also I think you probably saw value in bringing in data from different data streams on a single farm and finding ways to merge those. So talk to me a little bit about sort of the entrepreneurial side of your work, if you would, and how that works.
As soon as we started with doing this, and I always did this with my entrepreneurial partner. I had a partner in this with Bonnie van Ranst that some people will know. As soon as we started doing this, and he had a real entrepreneurial head and I had an academic head, but we kind of combined our strengths. And then as soon as I was showing, let's say, some of the applications to people, then people got interested from the business side. And then the first one who really got interested in this was Zoetis in the time. They were not even called Zoetis. Zoetis wanted to buy this, let's say, this idea of getting it together, because they wanted to roll it out to advisors, to people all over the world, trying to indeed bring that data closer to the advisors, vets or non-vets, that was to be discussed. But eventually, through some, let's say, changes, the first prototype of what I built was acquired by Dilaval and is now called Dairy Data Warehouse. And that's a real data warehouse which has, let's say, the old SQL databases in the back. And we sold that idea at that moment, probably right on time, because we wanted to do other things as well. And I was especially getting ready for the sensors. I also saw the opportunity to add more data streams to a SQL structure. This is a bit technical, but I saw that you would never be able to do this. And for example, the pictures from farms even, or video streams, or if you think about that, that's a multimodality, they call it, a multimodal data stream. Well, that really asks for a different hardware software solution. And that's when we, let's say, we transformed. We had a deal with De La Valle to not be competing for 5 years. And eventually that transformed in what people know as the Moogle project. And the Moogle project really had the idea to use the on-farm existing data and bring it closer to anybody who wanted to use it, but in a multimodal way. And right now, for example, my lab is looking at trying to use data in a way that we could exploit the multimodality more. So you have a stream of sensors, you have the stream of the feed, let's say the mixer wagon stream, you have the stream of the milking parlor, you have the stream of the herd management. What can we learn by integrating those streams? And then especially at this moment, we're integrating it with large language models so that we could do the live hypothesis testing. Somebody's feeding differently on a farm. What's the effect? Where can we see it? Can we even talk with, let's say, the data? That's something that we're exploring. Like the large language models are really powerful. I think we're going to showcase this on ADSA next month. So we trained the large language model using all the abstracts from Journal of Dairy Science somewhere in the early 1900s. So that's like 100 years of data in a large language model, because we know that the large language models of today, they don't have the scientific knowledge because they didn't have access to it. So, and we found a way so that we can make use of the large language models combined with also the modeling that we are already doing, so that we could go towards live hypothesis testing. And that becomes something which is attractive from a scientific perspective, but also from a non-scientific perspective. And I always try to find a way to balance, because the non-academic world for me allows me to put my boots on the ground once in a while and help me say what we're doing now doesn't make sense, because the farmer will tell you. He will say why did you do it? And if he says it doesn't make sense, then you really know it doesn't make sense. Although they might not be interested, of course, in all the hypothesis testing, but it's that in between. I like it. It's not applied, but it's also not really fundamental.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
The funny thing is that if you talk with pure veterinarians or you talk with pure data scientists or pure dairy scientists, they find it a bit strange, because you're not entirely focusing on the domain. But for some people, you're already quite advanced. So last week, I remember talking with a faculty member, and he said, if I hear you, it's like you're doing really strange and crazy things, very advanced. But if you would propose the same thing to the data science community, they're like, yeah, but this is applied. This is not interesting.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting also component there, because we need it. But on the other hand, you also need to kind of find a way that it fits in. Well, it doesn't fit in any of the buckets, but it needs to somehow, if you want to get it funded, it needs to fit.
You kind of cross academic silos, right? You're not really in anyone, but that's kind of a fun place to be. I think
it's a fun place, but it's an interesting also place to find funding. Who wants to support this kind of things? It's interesting. Of course, the only good thing that we have, it's a bad thing to say, but let's say the whole methane component of dairy, of course, has opened up a whole, let's say, a new component to this, where people really want to invest in doing this. I was in India some weeks ago, and then you really see the problem at stake. And you're thinking about, okay, how can we transform knowledge from, let's say, the developed dairy? Can we use data tools to bring that knowledge to very applicable things to make sure that we don't destroy this planet, and that's where I do have some, let's say, passion as well, trying to make sure that what we do has to make sense, and has to make sense long term. I have two young kids, and I want them to grow up in a planet that's still there, that they don't have to fly with Elon Musk to a place that has not been inhabited yet, or how do you say that, inhabitants yet. Sorry.
Well said.
Our Yeast 40 is a natural biotechnology from ICC, designed to boost the health and productivity of animals under challenging production systems. Our Yeast 40 performance is supported by an unique processing technology that results in a pure product containing high levels of beta-glucans, MOS, and yeast metabolites. These factors combined promote the ruminal and intestinal modulation, helping the animals to reach their full potential.
Can you give me one example? Like, you were talking through some examples of working with producers to sort of mine their data even 15 years ago and bring unexpected insights. Can you think of an example, sort of in the more recent years, where you uncovered something, a surprising recommendation for a farm that kind of emerged from doing these sort of data integration efforts?
Yeah, I have a very clear one. I often use it in my in the presentations that we give nowadays. I think at a certain moment, somebody ever published a graph which showed the linear correlation that exists between lying time and milk yield. And that's, if you Google for milk yield, lying time, almost immediately that graphs, and I think you know which graph I'm talking about, pops up. Never published, was just somewhere in, let's say, I think in a presentation by somebody who did a linear regression on a base, a very small data set. And then suddenly it kind of becomes a source of truth for everybody. So everywhere in the world, people would say, cows need to lay down if you want them to make more milk. And I think nowadays, for example, with all the sensor data, we know that that hypothesis is probably, in my opinion, I think it's wrong. I do think it's good that we try to have cows lay down more. But what we know from our recent, let's say, studies, and we're now using some AI to try to really look at that relationship in a different way using sensor data from farms, because it is probably not that linear. There's probably some things that we overlooked. I remember last year when we had the Discover conference, is I asked a question to the audience before my talk. And I think the question was something like, do older cows eat more minutes compared to younger cows? And I think I asked it in the room. And then I had people answer, and I think the big proportion of the room answered the wrong thing. So they said what their gut feeling was thinking. And that's, of course, what I always say is, when we start digging into the data, and that's what we recently did with some of these sensor technologies, is then you see that the old things that we had in our mind and that our gut feeling says, yes, older cows eat more minutes. Yeah, that's not true. They eat shorter bouts, let's say more aggressive. They have a bigger beak. And people have that somehow. We have this in our mind because of some older studies that did not have the possibility to look at this in a continuous way. The measurements that we can do nowadays when it comes to behavior, it's enormous. But because of that, there's enormous amount of data. I currently have an undergraduate student working on a data set with sensors. And only looking at it, the multidimensionality that you have, because you have it for every 15 minutes, for every 2 hours, for every day, you have lactation patterns. And all those relationships, there's no statistical method right now that really can disentangle that by taking it as a whole. And so what we typically do as researchers then is that we kind of chunk it. We look at it from a lactation perspective, let's say days in milk.
Yeah.
And then we look at it in a diurnal pattern. But what if, like, we're working right now on models that would be able to say, tell me, for example, do cows that produce a lot of milk, do they need to eat in the night or in the day? And does it matter at peak yield or after all? Like, and those type of questions, that's a very multimodal thing. And that's only something that probably we will be able to do once we intelligently combine the data and then add the correct techniques on top of it. But it's it's not easy. Because you have to really have those. If you give the data sets to a data scientist, I had it with the undergraduate. He comes back after 3-4 months. Okay, I didn't just let him work on it for 3-4 months without any input. But suddenly, and the funny thing is my phone pops up and that guy right now is sending me a message because I gave him the data set. And as a data scientist, the problem is that it's so difficult to get into this biology. But you give it to an animal scientist and it's so difficult to get it well managed because he doesn't have the data skills. So it's, and that's what we're trying to do as well now.
You're the translator, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the translator and the teacher that tries to tell them, like, don't only focus on skill set dairy science, also look at data science. And once people dig into it, what I like the most, the best ones that we've seen so far, is often the vet and the dairy scientists that start to appreciate the data science. Those are the best. If you have to go from data science to animal science and dairy science, it's way more difficult. Why? Because a biological process like lactation or understanding the industry, it's so difficult for if you have no background at all. But they like it, of course, because it's like, yeah, I work with cow pictures and I now have a guy working with video data. Well, I have to have the veterinary student sit next to him to be able to tell him, like, hey, what is this calf now doing on the screen? But if you have to do that all the time, yeah, so you see, it's not only integrating the data, it's integrating the different domains. It's integrating the skill set. It's integrating the people. But that's nice. But it's a completely open domain. And of course, we see now that a lot of universities or colleges around the globe, they're having new positions that will fill up this void or this gap. So but that's good. I love to see that.
It is. It's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And sometimes people will say, like, yeah, they're the data geeks, but I feel like a vet with data skills, not like a data geek with vet skills. That's still my way of saying it.
That graph you talked about, I was sitting there thinking, just correlating lying time and milk yield, for example. And there's so many things that could drive that relationship that have nothing to do with causality, right? For example, older cows both make more milk and likely lie down more or are dominant to at least get their access to beds more than a heifer would. So right away you have an autocorrelation, right?
But the thing is that...
So that's the risky thing with data analysis.
Yeah. But the thing is that human brains, they work in very simple linear regressions. One thing correlates with the other and it's association causation immediately. And then from the moment that you make it to, and that's where we have on the data science, and luckily there's a lot of things happening right now, but the problem is that on the data science side, we need to make models more explainable. So what is going on there? Because people, they like the linear regression because it's much more easy to explain. The one which is complex with multivariable models, people go like, ah. So that's interesting as well to understand from a scientific perspective, like what is reality, simplicity, those things make it, it's very easy to draw a simple conclusion. But we know that dairies are much more complex than just these simple regressions. But that's the good thing. And we need to find a way to also have young people being trained to understand this, work with the data. I have a class right now, it's finishing, and they're going to have a presentation where we very simply, I give the students a problem on a farm. I say, like, this is the problem on the farm and you have a semester to solve it data-driven. And I'll guide you, but I won't solve it for you. It's you guys, you solve it data-driven. And that's interesting because the problem solving really helps you to learn to program. I learned them to program, work with some basic data, let's say, skills, and do it problem solving, because then you start understanding that it's not so easy to just say, like, oh, I'm going to combine this data, like, and just it becomes one. That's not, that's it's a very easy thing to say, but it's in reality, it takes a long, long time. We know it.
And then, yeah, the third thing you brought to mind beyond we need to train an understanding of the animal and then an understanding of data, and then we need people that can communicate that right, which is almost as hard as the first two. Like you say, if you have a 7-way interaction with things and then you come to a conclusion, how do you explain that to somebody?
That's where the language models are. It's really interesting. The language models, you can almost like interact with those models. That's what we're exploring right now. Can we connect some of our older models that we had? Can we connect it so that people can ask questions to it? Like, instead of like publishing the paper with p-values and then all these metrics that nobody that even opens a new whole debate, maybe like, can we train it that the language model can tell you this is what you should focus on? Prioritize, like, and I'm excited to think about a moment where we will be able to go to a farm and say, are these heifers producing enough milk compared to everything that we know in science and everything that you can learn from the data? If we get there, then we can find those farms that we, for example, we don't focus on. Leave them alone. Maybe they just do exactly what we expect them to do from science. But maybe we should find the ones that are underproducing, that where there's milk or efficiency or disease that is way beyond what's expected, given everything what you can know from the farm. And that's where I think we're heading to. Long-term vision, of course, but that leaves me some academic freedom, let's say, to do things over the next years.
Fantastic.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together and the first ingredient in animal diets. Priority provides a more cost-effective and easier approach to nutrition. We recognize that not all bacteria are created equal. The specific strain truly matters. Priority IAC selects unique strains to provide the best performance in animals, and that's why we call these strains smart bacteria. Founded by Richard Brunig, helping to improve animal health one herd at a time.
All right, we've got to get our three questions in here before we're out of time. So first of all, do you have a favorite dairy-related book or resource that you turn to frequently?
Frequently, the one that I loved is I think we should organize it again. It's the Large Herd Dairy Management book. Somehow, I was there at the conference, that was really for me as a European at that moment. So it was really like, okay, almost all the knowledge that we had at that moment, joined with, let's say, an ASIM or an NRC. If you want to understand cows, if you had those, let's say, if you had the NRC model and you had the Large Herd Dairy Management book, probably, I said, then most of it is in there. So that's the one that I would definitely look at.
That was what, 2012 that we had that conference?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to know how much updating.
It was Dave Beattie who organized it. So I always found it strange that we didn't reorganize it because there's a lot to, let's say, that has been, that has passed since then. Maybe we should co-organize it.
Let's think about it. How about 5 years from now?
Yeah, that's good.
I like that idea. All right. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
My favorite book is definitely The 12 Rules for Life from Peterson. And then that just helps you get through rough moments in time. I recently had also some others that were added to the list. The one that I liked to start working with people in a team is Surrounded by Idiots. I don't know if you read that one. That really helped me. If you want to form a team, and some people are really like not, they don't like the book because it puts it uses the DISC assessment of people, but he uses the colors. But what I do like is that ever since I use that in my team here, I tell people which color I am, and I'm always telling them like, watch out because I'm looking for other people, let's say in the gradient of colors as well. But it's good because it allows you to explain you how you behave as a person, how you will misbehave as a person, and how they can counteract that. I had a DISC assessment of myself some years ago, and I give it to my students together with the book, and I'll tell them like, you can almost read exactly when I will go nuts and when I will go, when I will thrive, or when you will thrive. So, and that's powerful. So 12 Rules for Life and Surrounded by Idiots, I would say.
Particularly in the type of work you do, you're dealing with people from very different domains, which tend to have different personality types, right? It might be especially challenging. Yeah.
Yeah. In the data science domain, you love a bit more, let's say the blue collar people. What they will say is like the people who are quite structured. I'm not structured. I learned myself to be structured. But if you're not structured in a data science world, that's, but on the other hand, yeah, you also need people that really can think out of the box sometimes. But that's nice. If they know from each other that they are different, then they can even attract those differences, like, or put them together as a kind of a puzzle. And that's what you need to do. I tried it to bring it up into an undergraduate course, to have everybody like understand this. But that's challenging, but it's fun to play with.
Okay, last question. In your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
Probably I would have answered this question half a year ago different, but the question is, what is success?
Yeah.
If you're happy, probably that's success. You even have people happy, just probably, yeah, in different ways. Is it the number of PhDs in my academic world? But then I started thinking, maybe I should say, what would I like to have people say on my funeral? That you probably just, that you were able to change a little bit of the flow of the water when it comes to, in my case, let's say dairy and a global challenge. So for me, I think at this moment, the dairy professional, which is successful, if you just made a positive contribution, a significant positive contribution in this whole global cow or dairy issue, if you can call it issue, just this challenge that we have with how do we produce enough food for this planet without destroying it, where I see dairy having a contribution. And then my question is, if you're able to have a significant contribution there, then I think that would be successful. And if people will talk about me on my funeral about that, I'd be more than happy.
Great answer. Thanks so much, Miel. This has been a fun conversation with Dr. Miel Hostens from Cornell University. Thank you for joining us. And hopefully we can have you back on sometime again.
Thanks again.
This has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. And if you haven't followed the show, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. We'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.